The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
This is A Million Other Choices, and I am, as always, your host, Kim. Today is May's installment of Intimate Partner Homicides in Canada during the year 2008. And this one makes me very upset for a reason that I'm going to get to at the end. They all get me upset, obviously, but this one gets me in a way that when I was researching it, I was like, wait, what? Which, anyways, we're going to get to that part. This is the murder of Laura Wigglesworth. Within the province of Ontario is Huron County on the southeast shore of Lake Huron, one of the Great Lakes connected to Lake Michigan by a 5-mile-wide stretch of water known as the Straits of Mackinac. Huron is a rural community with a low population density, and within this farming country is a small, unincorporated village called Venestra, which was originally a top-secret property owned by the Royal Canadian Air Force during World War II to supply radar technicians. After the war, it developed into a training facility for wireless technology and was sold to private developers in 1971. This small community was once home to 14-year-old Stephen Truscott and 12-year-old Lynn Harper. Now, Lynn and Stephen really don't have anything to do with today's story, but I think it's an interesting tidbit to mention it, the history of Venestra. Lynn Harper was a lovely 12-year-old girl back in the early summer of 1959, living on the Air Force Base, which was the town back then, and friendly with 14-year-old Stephen Truscott. On June 9th of 1959, Lynn went missing, and her body was discovered raped and strangled in a farmer's woodlot. Stephen was arrested and charged with first-degree murder because he had said that he had seen Lynn that very day and gave her a ride on the handlebars of his bike and dropped her off at the intersection of County Road and Highway 8, and then she got into a late model Chevy. But the autopsy done at the time showed some partially digested food in her stomach that gave a narrow timeline of death window at the exact time that Stephen was actually with her. He was found guilty and was the youngest person in Canada sentenced to death, but that was commuted to life in 1960. And then in 1967, he was paroled. He moved under an assumed name, eventually to Guelph, where he married and had three kids, and he lived a quiet life until James Lockyer of the Innocence Project picked up his case and exhumed Lynn's body for DNA, which they weren't able to get. But the second autopsy showed that she could have been killed later than when the first autopsy said. In 2007, he was acquitted, but not declared innocent. They said the appellate has not demonstrated his factual innocence. At this time, and on the totality of the record, we are in no position to make a declaration of innocence. In these circumstances, we cannot say that an acquittal is the only reasonable verdict. Lynn's family remained convinced that Stephen Truscott had murdered their daughter, and it doesn't sound like any other reasonable suspect was ever found. Again, it's nothing to do with today's case, but an important reminder that Innocence Canada doesn't just take on cases of like innocent people, but those that perhaps didn't get a completely fair trial, but are still considered not factually innocent, which is fancy pants for probably did it, but we can't prove it, so we have to let them go. I think it's just something to keep in mind when you watch documentaries about those that the documentarian believes is wrongfully convicted. When you watch them, you have to consider the totality of the evidence and kind of think like a juror with information that they would have, which is not anything without the opportunity to be cross-examined. So like a neighbor says he saw or heard this or that, but he's never testified. You have to take that with a grain of salt. The same goes for theories when you listen to unsolved cases. Okay, enough of my side ranting. I've just been really annoyed lately by some cases I've heard and watched covered. In 2018, Invenestra was living the lovely and vivacious blonde and bubbly Laura Wigglesworth. I unfortunately don't know a lot about Laura's background. I know that at some point she had been married to a man named Nick Dale and had two children with him, Jacob, who was 10, and Natalie was 8. But Laura was divorced by the spring of 2018, 28 years old, and engaged to marry her boyfriend of about 2 years, 30-year-old Corey Voland, who had a daughter that was 4. Corey had proposed to her on Christmas Day in 2016, and they were happily planning their wedding. Corey worked at General Coach in Hensel, which is about a 14-minute drive from Venestra, and Laura was an underwriter at Middlesex Mutual Insurance in Ilderton, which made for a rather long 47-minute commute for her to the south. The couple had purchased their house together, and they had set a wedding date for August 18th at the Exeter Golf Course, and everyone was pretty thrilled for them, including the children and Laura's sister, Cheryl. Now, I think that's how you pronounce it. It's C-H-A-R-Y-L Phillips. So Cheryl and Laura had helped move their dad into a nursing home because he had ALS, and they were in the process of helping their mom sell the family home. So they were on the phone a lot with each other, either discussing the moves or the upcoming wedding. And the wedding invites had been sent out and RSVPs were starting to come in. On the night of May 9th, 2018, Laura and her sister Cheryl had one of their regular chats on the phone. And then Laura put her kids to bed, tucking them in, and then changed into her favorite Toronto Blue Jays t-shirt, track pants, and pulled on her pink and black runners, or sneakers for the Americans out there, and went out for her routine nightly walk. She went out with her phone's fitness tracker turned on and was seen on video cameras in the area walking as she always did along Quebec Road. She sent a Facebook message around 10 p.m. and the next morning was reported missing by Corey at 9:50 in the morning, who said that she had failed to return home from her walk but had taken the kids to school that morning to not frighten or upset them. As the police were in the process of gathering information about Laura's sudden disappearance, a 14-year-old girl looked out the passenger side window while driving with her parents and noticed a body on the side of the road in some bush along Front Road and Highway 8, about 2 kilometers from their house. Coincidentally, rather close to where Lynn Harper's body had been found 60 years before. Laura's death was immediately considered suspicious based on the way she was found, which appeared dumped, and there were signs of strangulation. And this was on May 10th. There is very little information about the investigation into her death, but I think you can figure out that on May 12th, when the police made an arrest, who that person was. And the police, when announcing the arrest, didn't reveal the person's name. They usually don't until they have been arraigned, which is usually the next day. But the speculation in town was that it was Corey Voland. But it was a hard pill for the town to swallow. Brian Cooper, who was part owner of Bucky's General Store, told the London Free Press, quote, "No way, 100% wrong. Nobody that knows him thinks he did it, not a chance. I've known him my whole life. I don't think he's even been in a fight in his whole life. There is still someone out there," end quote. Even Cheryl had a hard time believing that Corey, that she had welcomed into her family and had let her own daughters be around, who her family had gone camping with and broke bread with over Thanksgiving and Easter dinners, could have been responsible. In fact, the funeral was already scheduled at the time for the following day at the Falconer Funeral Home, and there wasn't time to amend her obituary that had gone out stating that Corey was the love of her life.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly, but then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
When you visit Arizona, time is measured in moments, not minutes. Like the moment you see the Grand Canyon for the first time. Visit a new state of mind. Learn more at hereyouareaz.com.
But there were a couple of things in the investigation that I do know. One of them is that when questioned initially, Corey said that Laura had not returned from her walk and he woke up in the morning to find that she wasn't home. And then after the kids were questioned, and they both gave accounts that went kind of like this. Now, I'm paraphrasing because I wasn't there. But that both of them had woken up sometime before 4 a.m. to the sounds of crying and screaming. Natalie had got out of bed to check what was going on and found Corey vomiting into a bucket and was told quickly and rather loudly to go back to bed. Jacob, who had also been awoken by the sounds of some kind of brouhaha, didn't get out of bed because he heard the tone of Corey's voice and felt it was best to just stay put. The next morning, they were told that their mom hadn't come home, and he drove them to school instead of their mom doing it. So when confronted with this story that she hadn't come home, he changed his story to include some stuff about an armed and masked intruder that came into the house and threatened them with a gun and strangled Laura, and then told Corey how to hide the body. Yeah, that makes sense. Totally believable. And so he was charged with second-degree murder. And as you are generally instructed to do, he pled not guilty and sat on that. And the reason you're always instructed at first to plead not guilty is because during the time that you're waiting on your trial to start, which is usually about 2 years, there is a chance that the defense can find some evidence to prove your innocence. Or maybe the case will get dropped, or as the time starts to approach the trial starting, the Crown might offer a plea deal to get you behind bars but without having to go to trial. And in this case, that's exactly what happened. In order to get a life sentence off of his back, he pled guilty to manslaughter instead of second-degree murder. And if you want some legal mumbo-jumbo, murder and manslaughter, although both involve taking another person's life, are treated differently by the court system. The only real difference in facts is that second-degree murder, there's an intent to cause serious bodily harm that could result in death. But you hadn't planned it, it just kind of happened. First-degree murder, there has to be the intent to kill. And manslaughter, there doesn't have to be any intent to cause harm even. But the real difference is when it comes to sentencing. Any second-degree murder conviction will have a life sentence, and then the time that you have to serve before asking for parole can range from 10 years to 25 years. And you may never get out, and if you do and you break a parole condition, you go back to serve the rest of your time, which is life. However, with manslaughter, you get a sentence that can range from, say, a suspended sentence, which is basically just some time on probation, or a life sentence. Now, a life sentence on manslaughter conviction is almost unheard of here in Canada. And even if you get life on a manslaughter charge, you're eligible for parole in 7 years. And I believe the average is a 7-year sentence with parole after 3 years. So normally you serve your sentence, you get out on parole, and if you behave yourself, you're free and clear. I mean, you still have a manslaughter conviction on your record, but you're no longer under any government supervision. You can pack up, you can move to another province or whatever you want to do. The other thing that happens when you plead guilty is that your lawyer and the Crown work together to come up with a statement of facts, which is a written document, and what happened. It's like what happened and when and where and all that stuff, but it doesn't have to have the why. So let's go through Corey's statement of facts of what he agrees happened on the early morning hours of May 10th, 2018. Well, sometime that night, they had an argument. Now, back before the marriage had been planned, Corey had revealed to Laura that he had occasionally used cocaine in the past. And this was a boundary for Laura, like a line in the sand, deal breaker, whatever you want to call it. And she told him that she didn't approve of drug use, and if they were to be together, he wasn't going to be doing that anymore. And if he did, she would not only leave him, but report him to Child Protective Services to protect his daughter. And he had agreed on staying within her boundary on that, so that was great. On with the wedding plans. Only on May 10th, she found out, or he told her, that he had broken that promise or deal or boundary. And she got all kinds of mad about it, leading him to put her in a chokehold and not let her go until she had stopped moving and breathing. And the statement reads, Bolin became enraged and put Laura in a headlock from behind with his right forearm across her neck and his left hand holding her right wrist. Of course, this woke the kids. He told them to go back to bed. Then he panicked, again, as I guess you would, dressed Laura back in the clothes that she had been wearing for her walk, wrapped her body in their mattress pad, chucked her body out of the second story window out onto the lawn below, went out, got her, heaved her into the back of her SUV, and drove it out to Front Road where he dumped her and her cell phone, which turned out to be a good move because police were able to use her cell phone to track her movements, including that she had been at home and had returned from her walk, contrary to Corey's tale that he wove. He put the mattress pad and one of her shoes into a tunnel near the church, went home, told the kids that their mom hadn't come home, and took them to school, driving right past her body and telling the kids to look out the other side of the car while they went past. He went home, he washed the bed sheets, and then called 911. Oh, and when Laura was first found, he hugged her ex-husband and father of her two children to console him and said, I'm so sorry, I should have been able to keep her safe. And at his sentencing, Corey said Laura was an amazing mom that he misses every day, and we were supposed to grow old together. Every day I wish I could turn back time. Victim impact statements were read, including from Natalie and Jacob, whose grief and pain is unimaginable to me. His defense lawyer argued that Corey Voland, up until May 10th, 2018, was a model citizen. He didn't mean for it to happen, and he panicked, and he took responsibility for it. There's no explanation. My submission was that this was senseless and inexplicable. He doesn't know the reason. The family doesn't know the reason. It's just what happened. And so he got 10 years, and with, of course, time served, that works out to another 8 years at that point. And that was on August 8th, 2019. I wasn't able to find an update because you don't normally do in these kinds of cases, I guess, that they consider like mild murders. So my guess is he's probably already out and about. And a guy like that without any prior convictions that pleads guilty, I'd say they wouldn't have made him serve his whole sentence. So he's probably online dating while I'm speaking. Although I think one needs to consider that having the ability at 30 years old to dress a dead body and throw it out of a window and then dump it on the side of the road is sociopathic behavior. And I don't think that kind of ability to compartmentalize your feelings goes away with time. Which leads me to my biggest problem that I have with this case. I mean, after the fact that a mom of two children, sister, daughter, and all-around friend of the community is gone. But wait, before I talk about that, I'm just going to go through again with you the red flags that often and do lead to intimate partner homicides. So there's prior abuse. Obviously, if he abuses you once, he'll likely continue to do so. Stalking and controlling behaviors, a recent separation, isolating you from friends and family, substance abuse, and prior choking. Prior choking is a really big one, and I think that's, we don't want to discount that one at all. If there's choking involved in the abuse that you or someone you know suffers, that is a big, big red flag. So if you experience any of those or know someone that is, please reach out to a domestic abuse hotline for professional help to get out. Don't try to do that on your own. But there's really no history of that here. I mean, there's actually no history of prior abuse, physical or verbal. No issues with Corey's temper, and his substance abuse couldn't actually be classified as abuse of substances. Although I guess that all sort of depends on your view of drug use. Now, I completely believe that abusers don't look scary. They aren't walking around in dirty t-shirts with a beer in their hand yelling at dogs. You can't always spot them until you live with them. But here's the thing. We are constantly being told by well-meaning therapists and TikTok relationship advice, our friends, I mean, everyone encourages us to put up boundaries. Just put up some boundaries. Tell the person you won't tolerate such and such behavior. Have some respect for yourself and your rights and be clear in your enforcement. And if you don't respect this boundary, these are the consequences for you of what I'm not going to do going forward. And Laura did that. And I completely commend her for it. I personally struggle with putting up boundaries. And why is that, you ask? Because I'm actually fearful of the consequences for myself if I put them up. I have no idea how to enforce them, even if I do put them up. If you just Google boundaries, all kinds of articles or tips come up on setting boundaries and how important they are. Psychology Today writes, once you get practice setting boundaries, you feel empowered, less anxiety, resentment, and guilt. Generally, you receive more respect from others and your relationships improve. But then you have other articles that say, like, if you set a boundary, expect to deal with anger, like how a toxic person reacts when you set boundaries. And actually, Corey didn't react badly to Laura's boundary about drug use. He understood her concerns and agreed that he wouldn't do it again. And she had laid out the consequences for him if he did that, and he did it anyways. Laura did everything right here, and she still wound up dead for it. As women, what are we supposed to do to stay alive? Think about in your daily life how many decisions you have to make to keep yourself safe from the few bad men out there that ruin it for all of the good ones. Laura did everything right. And Corey decided that he wasn't going to let her put down consequences for his own bad behavior and decided to murder her instead, to avoid her consequences. And why? So she wouldn't call CPS on him and maybe have to answer to them about his own choices. And look where it got him. I'm pretty sure he hasn't seen his daughter in a number of years. And if I was her, I wouldn't bother, because at some point she'll have to put up boundaries. And we all know how Corey responds to that when he breaks them. And this case just makes me so mad because there was nothing anyone could have done differently other than Corey. He was the only one out of line here, and he gave Laura's family consequences that they have to live with for the rest of their lives. And Laura is left with her life cut short. Her consequence for doing the right and self-respecting thing was swift and final. Corey wasn't an addict, so he can't blame his addiction for his actions. He went out one night, decided to do some coke, because I guess that's fun for some people. He knew that he had promised he wouldn't do it, and if he did, Laura was not only going to leave him, but probably take his daughter with her. But meh, he's going to deal with that when the time came. Doing the coke was more important in the moment. I'll deal with the consequences later. And I guess he did. And that was the murder of Laura Wigglesworth. Go forth and eat chocolate to deal with your inner rage. I'm going to be back next week with another case to get me all mad all over again. Take a minute to write a review, yada yada, but do consider signing up for the exclusive content. There are some really great episodes in there, and I really don't want you to miss out on any of them. Plus, everything is free from ads, so I think that's kind of a bonus. The price is still $1 a week or $5 a month. Now, I'm pretty sure that's US dollars, so like $1.34 a week or $7 a month Canadian. As always, thank you so much for listening.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.